From the Three Story Method Podcast Network.
This is the Serial Fiction Show.
I'm Christine Daigle.
And I'm JP Reinbush.
Welcome to the Writer's Serial Fiction Show. This is a companion podcast to the Reader's Serial Fiction Show. If you haven't listened to today's story, we'd encourage you to pause and go listen to Naomi Alt's episode on our companion podcast first. We can only play half the episode. So if you like what you hear, check out the full episode free on Vella. The links to the podcast and the Vella episodes are in the show note.
This week, we don't have any personal progress. Instead, we have a question for our listeners. What resources are you using to plot your serial fiction? Either it be craft books or the software you use, we're interested. So leave a comment on this episode.
Let's see. I'd love to hear if you're pulling from anime, manga, comic books, graphic novels, which are kind of the same thing.
Web novels, light novels, novels, movies, TV shows.
Netflix, Prime, Hulu. Let me just name all the things.
Yeah. Tell us. Name things.
Just name things.
Give us categories.
All right. With us today is Naomi Alt, and we'll be discussing their serial Chew. So your hook, which is the first thing you remember is pain, was just excellent. Is this something that you kind of think about when you write? Is like how you're going to hook in the readers, and do you kind of like work through how that's going to look on the page?
I spend a lot of time with that first line, and I probably wrote that line 50 to 100 times over and over again. And I think that final one, I wrote the whole story, and then I went back and rewrote it to get it to where I wanted. I'm a huge fan of Elmore Leonard, and I'm such a weirdo. I actually go through, there's a list of all his first lines from his novels. And there's even ones I haven't read yet, but I love these opening lines. So I'm sort of I study opening lines like a weirdo. So that was kind of important. And I'll probably look back on it in 3 weeks because I'm going to do some work to it for a novel and wish I could rewrite it again. And I probably will rewrite it again, and probably 3 or 4 more times. So.
Well, that's one of the strange things about serial, right? You can just always make changes.
Yes, good thing.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about how you use theme or armature in your work. And I know it looks different depending on the reader and the writer and who's reading it sometimes. But it seemed to me like you might be exploring survivor's guilt a little bit. So you have this nameless you, who we actually meet in the next chapter. But she has a lot of thoughts that they would have been better off being put down humanely versus being cured. So I'm just wondering how theme plays into your work when you're structuring a serial.
So I do, I am working from a theme. As I mentioned, I'm a brand new author, and this is my first work. So basically, I'm trying to, I know what I want it to say, and I'm working from that theme, and then I'm just putting it out there and seeing what if people get it or don't get it, or what they determine it's about. And it's funny that you mentioned the narrator of the prologue, because every person who's read it has thought it's a different person. Some people think it's a male, male. Some people think she's female. And I actually do later on reveal who it is, or give you hints. We'll say I give you hints about who that actually is, and then you'll see that person again. But it's been just interesting that you said that. So again, that just kind of goes in. I just put it out there, and then you guys, people tell me what it is, and then, okay, you're the reader, really, you're in charge. So I just put it out there.
Oh, that's fun. I assumed it was Allison, but maybe it's not. So I guess I'll have to read on to find out.
Yes. Yeah. About episode 6 or 7. I can't remember.
There was a bit of an armature, a theme that I picked on. That was a little bit about like community expectation and injustice. And I felt like this short story was very reflective of like current day, where like a community will almost judge you for the actions of your past, regardless of how you've changed. And you almost see, in my perspective, you almost see how the things that were done in the past, you know, you're reflecting it in this community, and this community is becoming the aggressor, and they're almost like treating this reformed person as the bad guy. I'm just curious if this is something that you're going to further explore in the rest of your serial, or what your thoughts are on that.
I love that you said that, because I am, I'm a pretty big believer in prison reform, and I don't think I could have wrote that and not had that come out. And so, yes, it more than likely will feature throughout the entire series, because I think it's an important part of how they're perceived as they're trying to return to society. And same with, someone that goes through, in fact, the original title was Rehab, you know, somebody who's trying to go through rehab and trying to, like, you know, get their life back together, you know, get a job. Because you're going to see, like, they can't get a job. No one will hire them. There's signs in the windows, you know, don't even come in here. And they're just, you know, and I feel like those are aspects that are just going to keep coming up over and over again. And I do think they mirror what we are. I tried to stay away from things that were going on, especially with the pandemic. But those are issues that are important to me. And I don't think I could have written it and not have those included.
Yeah. And I saw that too, just looking at this first episode, looking at your protagonist, who is this nameless you. They seem to have a motivation or a want to survive and to fly under the radar. But it seems like they have this need to push back against the prejudiced or to make change in the way that they're being treated by the rest of society. And I guess the antagonist here would be society's perception of them. So just wondering what you thought about, were you thinking about giving this nameless protagonist wants and needs in this scene?
I tried to set up a protagonist that was pretty much relatable, just going about their life. You know, it was their mom's birthday when they, you know, normal everyday things. And then they get put into this system where they're broken down so much that they eventually snap. And so I was trying, and I only had, I think I did it in like 2,000 words. That was really hard. I was trying to like show just in a gradual buildup of pressure. And it was all outside influences that completely reshaped this person who could have been you, could have been me. And then, I don't want to give away the ending, but, you know, and then they just turn into something else completely. And it has nothing to do with the agent that turns all these people into zombies. It's actually the system.
In terms of scene construction, we, Christine and I, look at this through a three-story method, which basically just means, you know, conflict, choice, and consequence, or in serial, sometimes it's cliffhanger. And so when we were looking at your scene, we were kind of trying to find those little moments, those little shifts in your scene. And for conflict, we kind of noticed that the one day the regulatory of experimentation dies down, or the regularity of experimentation dies down. And, you know, you have this kind of shift in, you know, the regular average day life that you've been kind of telling us, which is terrible, but it's the you character's life. And now things are changing and they're about to experience the world. So that's kind of like the tonal conflict shift. And then switching to the choice moment is, you know, now you have to be told that you have to be this emotionless, nice character, and, you know, someone else who is basically you is murdered in front of you, and you aren't allowed to react. And are you going to, or are you not? And then finally, you know, here we have more of a cliffhanger as to what happens, the choice that they make. I'm just curious, when you do scene construction, what does that look like?
So I read so many books about, you know, how to write. Actually, I'm reading that book, the three story, the one you just mentioned. I'm actually reading it right now. I'm not finished. I'm about halfway through that book. And I'll probably forever be reading books like that. So I'm still trying to find, I think, my method that works for me, how I want to break things down. But I think it follows that. I agree with the book so far. You know, you have like that natural rhythm for storytelling that's going to follow, you know, there's so many things, like in photography, you've got, you know, the rule of thirds. And I mean, there's so much that follows that. So I think it probably, you know, you've got your initial event, and then, you know, it's going to follow a natural progression until you get some sort of resolution, except in Serial, like you said, you're going to have some kind of a cliffhanger, or at least a question of, you know, well, what happens next? You know, is there a next? What's going to happen? So I'm still trying to find that, I guess, is my answer. I'm still trying to like find like a method that works for me. It would certainly make the writing a lot quicker if I had like a go-to, you know, instead of feel like reinventing the wheel every time I sit down. But yeah, I'm still trying to figure that out for myself.
I think that's something that we never stop doing. I think our process changes and evolves and becomes a blend of things that work for us, and what works for us doesn't necessarily work for someone else. So you said you like reading craft books. Is there any particular craft book or method that you found particularly helpful?
The first one I ever read was On Writing, Stephen King. That was great. Ray Bradbury has one that I read that was years and years ago. The book that I'm reading now mentions the masterclass for Aaron Sorkin, I think, which I thought was fantastic. I don't know that I learned so much as I learned that I really loved him watching that class. He's just great. I learned a lot from James Patterson has a masterclass, and I watched that too. And I learned a lot from that one. So it's not really a book, but man, was he interesting. To talk, he really goes into about here's how he does it. And actually, I will say he made me feel confident enough that I actually did start writing again, because I haven't written. I've been doing, you know, we owned restaurants, we had all this stuff going on. And with the pandemic, you know, then I had more time to do things. He actually gave me the confidence to feel like I could sit down and maybe try it again and actually finish. Because I think that's like, I think a lot of people sit down and they need to write their book, but then they don't finish. And that was always my problem. Like, you get hung up on those middles. And I felt like he really resonated with, you know, well, here's how you structure it out, and then that'll get you over the hump and you can get done. And I did. So I'm writing these things for Chew in like novella formats, you know, and I'm kind of doing it start to finish. And then scheduling all my posts. So I know exactly how many episodes there are when I sit down to load them up.
So what does that process look like in terms of, are you, you're outlining? I can see that you're planning, but what does that look like for you?
So it's just like, this is gonna probably not how other people do it. So I sit down and I figure out, you know, I have note cards, and I try to do some, I'll write out all my scenes on note cards, and then I take the note cards and I kind of put them in order. And then from there, I start typing out like, okay, so this is how I think this should go, scene by scene. And then I've been working a lot with dictation. So then I get a little bit more detailed in my outline using dictation, because my gosh, you could do 10,000 words in an hour using dictation. And I just kind of go from there. I'd say probably by the time I have a draft ready to actually post, it's probably like the 10th version of that file. My hard drive is crying right now. Because I don't get rid of anything. I just resave it. So I probably have at least 10 versions of the same story.
Yeah. You have the one that's called final draft, final draft. For real this yes. time, final draft.
Okay, I really mean it. This is the draft.
So what does your routine look like to stay consistent getting out the serials?
I write every day. I mean, I don't know how other people do it, but I get up early, sometimes between 4 and 5 a.m. every day. I'm writing full time. I don't need to get up that early. I have no idea why I'm doing that, but that's what I do. And I write at least 3,000 words every day. Even on the weekend, I don't know. If I don't, I try to stop and say that, well, you know what, maybe I need fresh eyes, you know, especially if I'm struggling and it seems like it's getting hard, but then it does, then your whole day's wrong. Like the whole day's wrong. I didn't write today. So now I don't know, the whole day's shot. So I just write every day now. But I'm still trying to find balance. I don't know if anybody else has it figured out, but the balance of, you know, writing and having a schedule, and I should really work out, you know, sitting. I've never had anything where I sat this much ever. I had no idea how much sitting was involved and how, I feel awful. So, you know, I'm trying to find a balance, like, you know, getting some exercise and cooking dinner, you know, just life, balancing the life with the writing. And that's kind of what I'm working on right now.
Shout out to Standing Desk, because they're fantastic. Just to throw out there. I love my standing desk.
What about a treadmill desk? I've heard about those. So, I don't know.
So I,
this is a whole conversation.
I know, right? But I'm really? Going to have it. So deal with
do
it, Christine.
Yeah, do it.
So I actually have an under the desk elliptical that I pull out, but I do not do writing or work when I'm on it. I will do any sort of absorbing that I need to do, or if I'm like reviewing or reading something, because there's too much movement going on. But I really like standing. So I've trained myself to be able to stand for like 8 hours a day. It took 3 weeks. So anyone that's out there, like, do a lot of leaning, do a lot of like stand up, sit down. But I mean, even this position isn't as like good for a long period of time. So you just got to get used to switch and flow. But I highly recommend standing desks because they're great.
Yeah. JP has converted me. I have the under the desk elliptical too, but I don't use it as much as I should. I'm not as good as he is. But when I am editing podcasts, I do pull it out because it's just kind of like mindless work. I pull it out for mindless work, but not for writing.
Well, that sounds like a fantastic idea. I do need to move. I need to move. Just my back really needs, I'm not used to sitting. I mean, we had a bakery and I mean, it's nonstop. Every job I've ever had, I've been on my feet. So this is just weird for me anyway. So
yeah,
I'll have to look at that. I'm moving into the office. I had mentioned my youngest son's away at college and he's moved permanently and he's not coming back. So I'm going to take over his room as an office. Cause right now I actually write on my kitchen table. So I'll have room though for a fancy stand up desk. So that kind of sounds like like the way to go.
Yeah. And also just health things. Like I have a little reminder on my watch. I can even put it on my phone. Like every certain period of time, it vibrates, tells me to get up because especially if I'm sitting for too long, like I'm going to get back problems. So mm-hmm. All the healthy recommendations.
Yeah. The back. I had no idea how bad sitting was for your back. When I was working like all these different jobs standing, I would look at the people in chairs, you know, longingly, man, I wish I could sit. And I had no idea how miserable it really is. So yeah, I'll definitely look into that. That's awesome.
Excellent. So back to the story. I'm really curious on what inspired you to write this first episode, which was the short story, in second person, like what drove that decision?
So I, this makes me laugh. People, you know, there's forums and stuff on Facebook and they'll say, hey, you know, what do you like, first or third? And I'm like, what about second? Why doesn't anyone else love second person point? I love that point of view. I love it. Maybe it's, you know, I'm a Generation X and we had those choose your own adventure books when I was a kid. So I don't know if it's that, like I grew up with those, but I think when you have short doses, it would be tough to read a whole book that way or write a whole book that way. But for a short story, especially where you really want the reader to kind of put themselves in that position, I think it's perfect. And I didn't envision that story being any other way other than second person, because I really want you to kind of feel like it could be you. So
yeah, I don't know if any other like first or third person would have made it feel so visceral as it did when I first read it, because I was like, ooh, this is a rough one. I love it. So you did great with that. I loved it. So
thank you so much.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. And I kind of have a love-hate relationship with second person. I mean, it can be done really well, but then sometimes it gets so specific, it doesn't feel like it's you. But yeah, I thought this was an amazing choice because it really did put you into that world and it was very visceral. So what are your favorite scenes to write when you're writing zombie fiction?
You know, it's not gore. I'm not a fan of gore. And if you read on, you kind of catch that. When you meet Clive, the villain of this particular novella piece, I guess we'll say, not a fan of the gore. And that's funny because I mean that's like a whole genre on its own. But I like, you know, the drama. You know, this person is just beating themselves up, and these two are arguing, and that's probably my favorite thing. The drama, the angst, the bleakness, the how sad can I make you feel before we move on to the next page? That's probably my favorite thing.
Do you have any tips for anyone that wants to write a scene like that?
Oh gosh, no, I'm the last person to give any tips. I got nothing. I listen to music, but I listen to music before I sit down to write, and I'll probably try to pick something maybe like violin or something like that. You know, I can't listen to music while I write. I have to have total focus. I can't be distracted in any way. But yeah, that's about it. The rest of the time, I listen to disco, which is kind of funny. Like a lot of this, I get a whole disco soundtrack that I'm rifling through. So, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess just try to like really put yourself in the position of the character, not yourself so much, like really try to get a handle on who that character is and how they're going to react to whatever the outside stimuli is that's happening to them at the time.
Now I really want a zombie movie set to disco music. Same. But maybe that's been done before. I don't know, but I can't.
Chew the musical.
Chew the musical.
There it is. Trademark it today.
I'm on it.
So right now you're releasing 2 episodes a week. Are you planning to keep that schedule, and how is that working out for you?
It works out pretty well. I do everything in arcs. I'm actually running a little bit behind, so now I'm saying that and I'm jinxing myself, but I try to schedule everything up at once, and then I don't go back to the dashboard. This time will be the first time in like a month, I want to say. I don't know. When I go back up to load these 25, because I have 25 more to do, and I just like to schedule them and not think about it and just be done. And then all I have to worry, I just keep writing the next one. Matter of fact, I'm halfway through the third one for the rough draft. So, yeah, no, it works out pretty well. I know they advised that we had 10 to start off with. So I feel like this season really went fast because they had 10 live ones right off the bat. And so by the time we started cycling through the 2, I was like, oh man, I'm running out of time. I really got to hurry up. So when this second one hits, that's 25. It's going to be 24 or 25 episodes. So I'll have 12 weeks to write the next one. So it'll be a lot less pressure.
Do you have any other writing plans in the works or things that you're dreaming up?
Oh gosh, so many. Who doesn't though?
I know.
Don't we all?
Yes.
Don't we all? James Patterson, I mentioned I did the master class. He has them on paper, and it's like 5-inch thick file of his ideas that he has. And I just thought, oh wow, yeah, I could see that. But I'm doing a fantasy series. I'm on the third book of that, I want to say. I'm just going to release those as like a series, a novella series. And I actually just started plotting out another dystopia. Surprise, surprise. This one's economic collapse, set pretty far ahead in the future. And the national sport is drag racing. So it's like Fast and the Furious meets the Hunger Games, I guess, if I had to explain it. My husband's a huge car guy. I actually just volunteered at a huge car event that we have that every year around here. And it's kind of nice because we can kind of sort of work together. He's like my biggest cheerleader. And so he can kind of advise. I am not a car person. I don't know anything about cars, even though I've been to every car show in the tri-state area over the last 27 years. I still couldn't tell you if that's a Plymouth or if that's a Buick or a Dodge, whatever. So he's pretty excited because he gets to be my technical advisor if I go through with it. That's pretty involved. So we'll see.
Yeah, definitely good to have a beta who knows the tech aspect of what you're writing. So as someone writing their first serial, what would you say to someone else looking to start a serial?
Oh, just do it. Just jump in. Just do it. It's fun. And there's a really huge support network of other authors. Like, there's so many of us who are doing this for the very first time. You can find, there's probably 15 different Facebook groups. You could bump into one without even trying. And we're all kind of like in the same boat, and we're trying to like figure stuff out. If nothing else, you'll make a lot of friends, and you will certainly learn a lot about writing and writing on a schedule.
Yeah, I agree. That's fantastic advice.
Well, thanks. Yeah. Our thanks today to Naomi Alt for letting us break down their episode. Finally, we want to thank you for listening to the Writer Serial Fiction Show. If you know someone who might enjoy the show, send them your favorite episode link. And if you want to leave an Apple Podcast review, we read all of them and use your suggestions. Also, leave a comment on this episode. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and we'll see you next time with another Serial Fiction episode.
And that's a wrap. We'll be right back.
This week, we don't have any personal progress. Instead, we have a question for our listeners. What banana?
Bananas or plantains?
Nope, it's just what banana?
What good luck banana? Figuring That's it out. Our- we're gonna give our listeners an existential crisis.
What banana?
Did you ever listen to Adult Themes for Voice by Mike Patton, who did Faith, who was the lead singer of Faith No More?
No.
He did this weird CD that was just him in hotel rooms recording himself while he was on the road doing weird things with his voice. And one of them was called Melt Banana. And it was just like, Melt Banana, Melt Banana, Melt Banana.
Milch Banana.
Melt that Banana.
Fantastic.
I will put that at the end. That'll be an outtake. It'll be at the end of the show. Melt Banana. I probably don't have the rights to use that. I can't use that. You're just going to have to look it up.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Just be a bunch of bleeping. Yeah, it's this thing. He just went beep,
beep, beep by Mike Patton.